Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Have to govern this state and our communities with an eye towards what's in the best interest of the law-abiding citizen, what's in the best interest of families who are trying to raise kids, what's in the best interest of our seniors who are here to retire. That's what it's got to be. And too often, it's like people in other states and other cities around that are not doing well, it's like they let the inmates run the asylum. That doesn't work. You have to make sure that everything we're due is geared to that quality of life, public safety. Those are non-negotiable.
So the governor yesterday signing HB 1365, this is the ordinance statewide prohibiting public camping and requiring municipalities and, you know, local sheriff, local cops to actually enforce this requirement on public land. This would be on, you know, sidewalks, parks, parking lots, you know, those kinds of areas. And also giving private entities the ability to basically create a cause of action or a lawsuit against municipalities or counties if they fail to enforce these ordinances. And, you know, because you might imagine that some places politically aren't interested in moving the homeless, and other places you might imagine are willing but unable. They don't have enough resources, perhaps. And then there's other places where they're sort of eager to do it and maybe have not felt like they had the authority to do it, or felt like they would run afoul of, you know, rulings from the Supreme Court about things like public access, or that you cannot move people from an area if you don't have somewhere else for them to go. Like if there's no shelter space, you can't tell people to get out unless you also have a way to tell them for somewhere to get in. Because, I mean, if you just sort of think about that as a public policy problem, the idea that you can move people along presupposes that there's somewhere eventually where they can't be told to move along. Well, the basic challenge of somebody who's homeless is they don't have a place to go, right? So are they required to just kind of keep moving from park to park, from library to library, from, you know, street corner to street corner? You know, if you can move them from here and they go over there, and then you're allowed to move them from there and then they go, you kind of see the problem sort of philosophically. If they don't have a place where they can just plain be, then that starts to look like a human rights violation. Right? I mean, that's what it starts to look like. And, I mean, it is. That's what the Supreme Court has said. If you don't have a place for them to go, if you don't have open shelter space, then it's not fair. It's not right to just kind of keep moving them along. Of course, the problem is that if they're allowed to stay in an open place like a beach or a park, then what happens when other people, like, you know, your wife, want to take the kids to the park and feel like it's unsafe there because there's a vagabond there who, you know, often doesn't look the best and might mutter to themselves or swear or might smell or, you know, might in certain circumstances do drugs, right? Or might engage in criminal activity or might even be threatening. And even if this particular person isn't like that, your wife or the kids has formed a perception that people who look like that are people who behave like that. And is it incumbent upon society to require her to endure them when she goes to a place that she's expecting to be able to be in public with the kids? I mean, these are problems that everybody can understand. We tend to look at these problems through the lens of sort of what matters to us the most. And, you know, a lot of people look through the lens of, well, I don't really much like to see poor, dirty beggars all over the place. But, of course, you also have to look at it through the lens of their people. And not just people, you know, not just like compassion as a Christian on everybody who's made in the image of God, but through the lens of these are citizens with rights. And even non-citizens have rights. I mean, we don't often say it, but it's true. Non-citizens have loads of legal rights, and they have, you know, pre-existing human rights that we form into law to protect those rights. We call those, you know, legal protections or human rights. And, you know, you can't just violate those because it's inconvenient for you or it's unpleasant for you. And so we have this basic problem. How do you set up the rules governing access to or occupation of or use of public spaces that are generally allowed to be used by anybody, but then they get abusedly used by some people in a way that discourages their use by other people? I mean, that's your basic problem here with the homeless being in public spaces. And the governor says, look, we've got to basically govern on behalf of the normals and not govern on behalf or the housed or the people who have a place to go and not govern on behalf so much of the people who don't have a place to go.
That's why today I'm signing HB 1365. It will help maintain and ensure that Florida streets are clean and that Florida streets are safe for our residents. This legislation prohibits camping on city streets, sidewalks, and parks.
And that's a very understandable reaction to an abuse of the public space. Now, the problem is, how do you define that abuse? Because if, let's say, I decide to go to a park, okay? Nobody would think twice about Andrew pulling up in the car, parking, and walking, and then, you know, I don't know, playing Frisbee with the boys, okay? No problem. What if I stay for 6 hours? No problem. What if I stay for 12 hours? Well, you know, if it's me, the way I dress, the way I look, probably no problem, right? But tinker with the model a little bit. What if instead of playing Frisbee for 12 hours continuously, you know, what if I decide to sit down and read a book for an hour? No problem, right? Ah, that's what a park is for. Okay, what if I'm sitting on a park bench for an hour reading a book? No problem. Well, what if I sit there for 3 hours reading a book? Well, you know, no problem. We start to get a little twitch in the voice, right? What if I decide to, in the middle, I'm tired. You know, reading is exhausting. And so I lay down and I take a nap. And no problem. You know, you're just a guy with a job and a house and you dress nice and you smell nice and you don't look threatening and you're just taking a nap on a park bench because, you know, reading Hegel is exhausting. Right? I mean, no problem. Well, when does it become a problem? If I sleep for 3 hours instead of sleeping for 30 minutes? If I sleep for 3 hours and I decide that it's cold, so I put a newspaper over me? Why would you use a newspaper? I don't know. Don't happen to have a blanket. What if it is a blanket? Does that make it okay? Well, what if in addition to using a blanket and sleeping in the park when it's cold for 3 hours, I also wear, you know, ugly clothes? And let's say I don't comb my hair very well. And let's say I have bad breath. And let's say I, you know, just happen to have some mental issues. Like, at what point exactly does it become a problem? Well, we don't know. That's hard to define. But if it's one person laying on a park bench for a half hour reading a book or taking a nap after they've been reading a book, what you say is, fine, that's what parks are for. But when it's 40 people who are all sort of unpleasant looking and they're all staying at that park overnight or during the day, hanging around, making mom with the kids feel unsafe, you say, well, that's a problem because now she can't use that space and the kids can't use that space. And you know, this is basically the issue, right? It's a very difficult thing to pin down. And if you tell them they can't be there, well, why? And do they have rights to exist as a citizen or non-citizen in a public space? Again, the governor says, look, this is forcing people, the local municipalities, to comply. We're not going to follow the model of, you know, New York and California and places that just allow you to camp anywhere. And you get these really unpleasant looking and unpleasant to walk past and perhaps unsafe to be at or exist in spaces that are ruining public lands. That's the problem.
You know, it's one thing, and courts have ruled like, hey, you, kicking somebody off the street, if you don't have a shelter or anything like that, they've said that's unconstitutional. I'm not sure that's the original understanding. James Madison would have said that, but nevertheless, that's what courts have said. But what you have here, what the mayor's doing, he's providing them here's where you can go. And if they refuse, then you absolutely have the right to arrest them and remove them from being effectively a public nuisance at this place.
Because, again, at a certain point, that's what it is. It is a nuisance to other citizens, making it so that they cannot enjoy the space that is designed exactly for their use.
These are difficult issues. Some people fall on hard times. I know there's mental health issues running rampant. I know drug issues. These are difficult issues. But you should not be accosted by a homeless like we see. You should be able to walk down the street and live your life. And so this bill and what some of the local governments have done is just going to make that clear.
I never had previously heard a homeless as a noun before. It's kind of like an illegal, right? You would historically have said an illegal immigrant, right? And you might say a homeless person, but I'd never heard somebody a homeless. I suppose next we'll verb it. You know, they're homelessing. Homelessing in an undesirable way. So he says, look, we're going to clean up the sidewalks. We're going to offer addiction support because the ordinance requires that the county or the city provide a place that you can take them to. And there are challenges there. Where's that place going to be? That can only be in existence for up to a year. It has to not adversely affect the property values of the areas around it. It starts to look like an almost impossible thing to satisfy. But that's the requirement, sort of, that the Supreme Court seems to have imposed. It says you can't just kick them out and out and out if you don't have somewhere to kick them in, right? I mean, that's the idea.
We're going to have clean sidewalks. We're going to have clean parks. We're going to have safe streets. And that's just going to be the case. All the other things, mental health, drug, substance abuse, we want to offer that, but that's got to be offered in a way that is not going to impinge on the public's right to have a high quality of life in the state of Florida. So I think this is the absolute right balance to strike. I don't think there's any other way you could approach it and expect to have a result different than what's happened in places like San Francisco and New York City.
So the landing point for this law doesn't start till October. Implementation doesn't start till October. So there's a fair amount of time for, you know, local law enforcement to try to figure out what they're going to do. And for local government to figure out if they're going to create a place that they can take them to, which is primarily relevant if there's not low barrier, low cost shelter space available for them. And that always is a scarcity. This is something that the city and the county in Escambia particularly have been trying, you know, saying they're working on, but we've so far never really manifested something. We've got some things in place, but not the kind of thing that would really, you know, work large scale for everybody that you'd want to take it to them. And he basically says, look, we've just got to get people to get rid of the idea they can go camp anywhere they want to. But again, I tell you, there is this sort of bundle of questions, bundle of line drawing exercises. And again, depending on which side of this tension you want to fall on, will direct which questions you ask. Like, I think people who are sort of on the side of the homeless, including the homeless themselves, will say something like this. It sure does seem like you're criminalizing poverty. It sure does seem like you're making it very, very hard to just be poor, right? And what you say in response is, well, that's not the intent. You say, well, that's what the practice sort of looks like. What about people who are mentally ill? What about people who are actually a danger? This is a hard problem. It's not easy. It's not obvious. And it's not so much a question of, well, just move them along because we need to have the public spaces be clear. They are people, too, entitled to access to a public space. That's what it means for it to be a public space. And so how do you resolve that conflict between what people want to be able to use in the park and the sidewalk and, you know, what happens when people misuse the park and the sidewalk in a large number? 524 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
I have diabetes. I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
I have asthma. I'm at risk, too.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine, a Pfizer vaccine that can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
I've been collecting watches since around 2018. Made my first big purchase thinking that was going to be my only watch. When you're looking at watches and you're doing them online, or if you're in the secondary market, it can be scary because there's a lot of fakes. And I really do focus in on coming in to an authorized dealer like Berets for any of the Omega or Breitling purchases. They will let you try it on, take pictures, go home, think about it, and just really set your mind at ease.
Come visit us at Berets Jewelers.
Spring is a great time of the year for gardening, whether it's fertilizing the lawn, pruning, planting shrubs and summer blooming plants, and of course, tending to that vegetable garden. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got spring gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesday, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9. It's sponsored by Pensacola Hardware, Blue Sky Landscaping, and Barnes Feed Store.
Pensacola Right Now with Joe and Austin. 4 to 7 on News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
What is that? A Twisted Sister pin on your uniform?
Good morning, 527 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Just a minute ago, we were talking about this anti-camping, anti-homeless ordinance that the governor signed yesterday into law, and somebody texts me and says, do you disagree with the governor? No, I'm hopeful that this is going to be an effective solution. I am. Do they pay taxes? Same person asks. Doesn't matter. Paying taxes is not the price of admission to public amenities. I mean, it's just not. We don't require that of people. We don't put a gate up and require them to prove that they've paid taxes. Being a citizen or being a non-citizen. Again, human rights are inherent to the person because they're a human, not because they pay taxes or have jobs or are even a citizen. And again, same person just sent me a bunch of cuts, which is fine. Do you enjoy patronizing business on Palafox with people sleeping on the street with all their belongings? Oh, absolutely not. No, I hate it. Right? I hate it. Right? Exactly. So what do you do about that? Well, that's the challenge. I mean, that's why this is not an easy issue. 528, David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Texas-based Roadrunner Charters Bus Company says it won't be taking migrants to New York City or surrounding areas anymore while a lawsuit is pending. The New York City Department of Social Services is suing Roadrunner and 16 other bus companies for taking those migrants. The Biden administration announcing a new tailpipe rule calling for the majority of new passenger cars and light trucks in the U.S. to be either hybrid or electric by 2032. This new rule calls for a target of 35% to 56% electric vehicle production within those 8 years and a target of 13% to 36% of vehicles to be hybrids.
Our place where we drive electric vehicles is so good that we will build a wall around it and force you to stay in to enjoy the benefits of driving these electric vehicles. That is exactly what we plan, yes, by 2032.
Can we just take a minute to appreciate that accent? That was wonderful.
Did I go too far?
That was great.
Go on.
And the Los Angeles Dodgers and San Diego Padres wrapping up their game series in South Korea today. The Dodgers looking to complete the sweep after a 5-2 victory yesterday. And hopefully there's no bomb threats at today's.
You're right, exactly. Or, none of your starting players discover that their translator is stealing millions of dollars from them on the side.
Right, that's also not good.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani's translator, like his best friend, a brother, was basically stealing money from him to pay off gambling debts that he at first said Shohei knew about, and now he says, no, he didn't know anything. I was just stealing money from him. Right? I mean, that's basically what happened, right? Yeah. Cool, cool. 529 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. What else do we have going on? Oh, just in case this is going to irritate you, because we're talking about the homeless thing, we now have a court ruling that says that you cannot make a law declaring it illegal for illegal immigrants to own a gun. Which is kind of an interesting one, right? Because people who are typically against illegal immigration are typically pro-gun and typically say, you know, shall make no law, right? Shall not be infringed. And then turn around and be like, but I don't know about those illegal immigrants. Well, I mean, if they're people and they have a right to self-defense, unless they've committed a crime. Well, they committed a crime by coming here. Felony or misdemeanor? The distinction matters.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. It's a struggle to help nearly 1,600 Americans trying to get out of Haiti, where violent gangs are fighting for control. State Department chartered helicopters were able to take about 30 people a day from the capital, Port-au-Prince, to the Dominican Republic. A plane chartered by the state of Florida got 14 people home yesterday, with more flights expected today.
These are folks that need our help now because the situation has become very dire. So we're going to do everything within our power to be able to bring more and more Floridians back to safety.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis there. California voters approved Proposition 1, more spending on housing and treatment facilities for mentally ill homeless people.
The election ballot question happened back on March 5th, but it took 15 days to tally mail-in ballots and determine that the measure had squeaked by. Governor Gavin Newsom said the approval is a bold choice by Californians who've been frustrated for years with the scale of the state's homelessness problem.
Fox's Ted Linder. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Clear skies right now. It's 51 degrees in Pensacola. I'm David Wayne. Well, 14 people stuck in Haiti now have made it back to Florida safely. State officials coordinated a rescue flight that landed last night in Orlando. 8 adults and 6 kids on board. Governor DeSantis says it'll be the first of probably many flights to bring people who are in harm's way back out of Haiti. He says there's currently more than 300 Floridians stuck in Haiti awaiting a rescue. Well, Governor DeSantis has signed that new legislation to tackle the homelessness issue. The law bans anyone from setting up a camp or sleeping on public property.
We've just got to get it out of our system in our country that somehow anyone has a right to just camp out on the sidewalk and inconvenience other people. That's not what those sidewalks are meant for. We want to make sure that we put public safety above all else, and I think this bill does that.
And the new law goes into effect October 1st. The leader of the Santa Rosa County Teachers Union now making a run to become the next superintendent of the district.
The district had a huge increase in discretionary funding this year, almost a 6% increase in discretionary funding. And we thought that increase in discretionary funding warranted more than a 2.07% salary increase from discretionary funds.
That's David Godwin from last week announcing a contract agreement following 10 months of negotiations. In addition to serving as president of the union, he's also a longtime math teacher at Pace High School. According to South Santa Rosa News, Godwin is now in the race along with incumbent Karen Barber, Brenda Stevens, and write-in candidate Michael Maradick. Escambia County Administrator Wes Moreno says there have been discussions recently over the future of the Pensacola Bay Center. Apparently, some of those discussions include determining the best course of action to make sure Pensacola remains competitive.
Point of sales there with concessions. I think all that can work together. I think we can be competitive. That's a good plan. I think it's not the Lamborghini plan, but it's not the Hugo plan either.
And that's County Administrator Wes Moreno. Of course, this coming after the big news last week that the city of Mobile is intending to tear down their civic center and build a new $300 million, 10,000-seat arena there. And Donald Trump still looking for a potential running mate in November. And according to multiple reports out yesterday, he's now considering Senator Marco Rubio for that spot. Rubio is said to be on a long list of potential vice presidential candidates, and it could be a while, though, before Trump officially makes his pick. 534, News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We will have a beautiful day today with temperatures warming up near 71 degrees. Clouds increasing for the evening hours. Temperatures overnight dropping near 57. For Friday, a couple of rounds of heavy rain possible. 70% chance of rain, high near 68. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 57. Isolated showers possible on Saturday. 10% chance, otherwise mostly sunny skies with a high near 68. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you, Brooke. 51 in Pensacola, 50 in Gulf Breeze, and 45 in Milton. Your next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3, and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
Hi, it's Bess Marks with Lazy Boy Home Furnishings and Decor. I want to read a little letter that I got from a wonderful friend. And she said, oh my gosh, wow, Bess, you and the Lazy Boy design team, you nailed it. We love it. We just can't believe it's ours. And that's what we call a standing ovation for our design team. Lazy Boy Home Furnishings and Decor, Mobile, Pensacola, and Spanish Fort. Just like a picture out of a magazine.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Northwest Florida ranks high in opioid-related deaths, and drug overdose among youth ages 10 to 19 is increasing. One dose of fentanyl, the size of a grain of salt, can be lethal. Help is available. Just like you keep a first aid kit in your car or medicine cabinet, have Narcan on hand in case of an overdose. Understanding opioids and how they work is important to keeping your family safe. For help or support, contact Lakeview Center OPUS program. And for more on what you can do to prevent opioid overdose,
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknights 7 to 10 before WEAR-TV News on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 5:37 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's good to have you with us on this Thursday morning. Yesterday, we had a chance to talk to Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves primarily about this system-wide technological outage that they are having, which is it's a problem. So we talked about that quite a bit with him yesterday. D.C., welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Morning, Andrew. How are you?
Good morning. I am great. I'm doing really well. Okay, so we got a lot of stuff to get to, but we've got to start with the big news, which is the city of Pensacola is in the midst of what you guys are calling a network security incident. And I know you've been very cautious about what specific things you might say about this, but let's maybe start with this. Is this a ransomware attack? Is this a malfunction within the systems? Did you guys break something? Did somebody else break it? Is it malware? I mean, And what's happening? Because I feel like I don't know.
So we're calling it a network security incident because that really covers everything that it could be. And understand, because this is something cybersecurity related, sometimes we don't associate this the same way that we would an investigation by PPD, for example. And as I mentioned yesterday, FDLE is now involved in this for state regulation, certainly grateful to have them on board to help us through this, because there's really two things to figure out. Is one is who are the threat actors? And then number two is just the general getting back to 100% in terms of operation. So we have two things going at once. And so in no way is it us trying to be evasive, but it's an open active investigation. And so it's certainly not my place, nor do I have the most knowledge about exactly what's happening as it pertains to the investigation itself. So we're, again, it's not by choice. It's just by the same way a police department, sheriff's department, in an active investigation is not, you know, getting into a whole lot of detail. That's kind of the position that we're taking.
Okay, so but I mean, from what you're saying, it was something done. It was a criminal act. I mean, somebody did something to the city. You guys are trying to investigate what that is and then deal with that as you're also recovering all of the implications of what was actually done. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
Okay, all right.
Details of what, who, the, you know, the five W's, right. You know, we either don't know or can't get into. But, you know, and look, the number one question is, I'm a citizen of the city, just like the other 55,000. The number one question everybody wants to know is, well, what's with going on with my information?
Sure.
You know, the truth be told, it's too early to say one way or the other. Obviously, I think common sense would tell you that if I was sitting here right now and we knew for a fact that had taken place, there's a protocol for that. That's what I can tell you. So,
okay.
But it's too early to say. And even once systems are back up and we have cleared, you know, everything at the city, there's still going to be investigation going on more than likely from a threat actor side. And there's going to be some investigation going on to make sure we are confirmed one way or the other on whether there's been, you know, data that's been taken by these threat actors.
And what I mean, obviously, we had this happen a few years ago under Mayor Robinson, just after the NAS Pensacola attack. Not connected except in time. And sometimes what we know is that a municipality might come to, you know, international attention through the news and then people decide to attack because that's just how these things work. But I assume that we, and you've said this, I assume that we're in a much better place than we were then because we've gone through it. And I assume that because of what happened before, you guys are taking precautions and doing training to be as defensible as possible in the wake of, in the face of future possible attacks.
Absolutely. I would say we are in a much, much better starting position in 2024 than we were, from what I was told, with many of the same folks still in the building from 2019. And so very grateful for that, our IT department. And remember, we have an incident commander for these types of things, which is Chief Craner of the fire department. The same way if we had a hurricane, the same way if we had something else. We have a protocol. We have a COOP plan, emergency plan in place for these exact efforts. And within the IT department, we have protocols and these are things that we train on. These are things that, so I'm very grateful that we have that infrastructure in place and that we continue to follow that. And, you know, as things become functional again in the coming hours and days, again, I'm getting two operational briefings every day. I got one at 9:30, another at 4:00. Today to continue to know what we can get out to the citizens. And the latest was yesterday afternoon, just in case you didn't see it, Pensacola Energy and sanitation customers, we are aware that the online pay system is down. You will not be getting a late fee or you will not be getting dinged because our system is down. Obviously, we are very cognizant of that. We appreciate everybody's patience with it, but we're going to be customer first in that sense and certainly not make. Yeah, I don't want there to be any anxiety out there that because you can't pay your bill today, that your gas is going to be cut off or that you're going to get a late fee that you wouldn't deserve. So we're on top of that.
And
well.
And I will say this on your behalf, because I know it's true just from knowing you, that if somehow or other, because of this, you get assigned some kind of a late fee or a penalty for any of your various accounts you might do business with the city on, you know, you guys are willing to fix that afterwards because you're well aware that that's not the customer's fault. Can I just get an amen on
Absolutely.
That? Yeah. Okay. No
doubt about it.
Yeah. I know that's the case. That's why I wanted to give you a chance to say it. We're going to come back to this because I know people still have lots of questions. I'm going to try to ask as many as I can. We're talking to D.C. Reeves, the mayor of Pensacola.
Sure.
Particular questions, because I think one of the anxiety frustrations sure. people have is that they, you know, they're not sure what is happening. So here's some of my questions. Pensacola Airport has or has not been affected?
100% has not been affected. And let me give you an additional detail on that. We had the two largest passenger throughput days this past weekend in the history of the airport.
Oh, so, wow.
That's a concrete, tangible example that operations are as normal as the airport.
Okay. The Port of Pensacola has or has not been affected?
Has not been affected.
Okay. Pensacola Energy, you already said the bill pay has been affected. Any other part of Pensacola Energy that has or has not been affected that you can say?
There's none, and I want to start no impacts to any enterprise, energy, port, airport, and no impacts to 911. The only deviation we've had is some of our non-emergency phone numbers had been moved. I believe those have already been moved back, but there's a list, and I know the media has been great about sharing. We just have had some alternate phone numbers for some of our offices, departments, and things okay. like that. But any mission critical, any emergency based functions, we have not lost any functionality whatsoever or at any.
So PPD, same thing. It either has not affected correct. Them or does not affect anything substantial.
That's correct.
Okay. Should people still pay their bills to the city in whatever form, if they can? How do you want that handled?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, there's still the ability to put it in the mail, to drop it off at the city hall facility.
On paper?
And look, I have as much sympathy for that as anyone. As I always say, I'm a millennial. I don't carry checks. But so I totally understand that. But just rest assured, if you are used to paying by bill pay or something like that, we are going to make it right for the customer, for the citizen, in terms of do not have any anxiety, like we said, over late fees or anything like that. And if you notice one 3 months from now that was during that time, certainly we will, again, make sure that we take care of that.
What about, like, permitting and construction and things that, you know, a delay of a couple of days could be pretty significant for their operations? Is there an effect there?
Yeah, so obviously some of the software that that is being used to be able to issue permits and all that, some of that, I don't want to get into every detail, not because it's secret, because I'll get it wrong, but there are some limitations in the permitting office. That being said, the permitting office is open, you know, for questions, for things like that. It's not everyone is here on site. So yes, they'll be able to better explain to you if you're building a house or something like that, what those limitations are. But what I'll tell you is I met with every department director on Monday, and we have asked them to look into, if you are a citizen or a customer interacting with your department, how could these delays impact you? And to be, we are going to play offense and be proactive about making sure if there was a deadline for Friday that is going to be missed because of this, we're giving everybody more than the benefit of the doubt, of course, but based on this issue happening. And one other thing, Andrew, to mention is jobs has come up as a question. Our jobs board and job application process is cloud-based. That has not been affected. So in terms of if there's a Friday deadline on a job this Friday, you could apply for it now. You could apply for it yesterday. So from a jobs board, city jobs perspective, everything's all clear there.
Okay. So potholes are being filled. Bad guys are being arrested. Trash is being picked up. Planes are flying. Boats are boating. And you know, as soon as everything else can be restored, it will be. And if anybody has had their information violated, there's a whole protocol for handling that. And law enforcement is doing the investigation, and we will know more when we know more. Did I give the best 18-second summary I can give?
That's very concise. And I just do want to reiterate, if people ask, why don't we have more information? Understand, my primary goal is to get the city back up and running and to let the legal authorities do their job. That's my number one goal. As much as I wanted everyone else to know all the details and all that, there's a lot of details I don't know. At the end of the day, those are our two primary functions right now. And so certainly as we can share more information, we will absolutely be doing that.
Well, look, I've always said, and I will say again, in this circumstance, if there's an incident going on and I call the sheriff and he doesn't answer, I figure he's doing law enforcement stuff. That comes first. Talking to me comes second. If I don't have details from the mayor, I assume it's because you're doing important city stuff and, telling me comes second. That never bothers me. So I don't worry about that at all. We always like to finish. We got so many other stuff we could get to. We'll just wait for next week. No worries. This is the big thing that people are concerned about. And I think I've asked you all the questions that anybody has asked me. Quickly, the lightning round, just for a little bit of fun, because we need it today. If there were one more season of a TV show that you could have made because they canceled it too quickly, what's your one more season of a TV show you want?
Not because it canceled too quickly. I think it closed out, but just because I would say Breaking Bad is probably my favorite show, but not because they needed another season.
Exactly. What is the highest level of math that you actually use in your adult life?
Oh, you'll get me on a soapbox about this. If it's only rationalizing poor grades in algebra, I would say probably somewhere in the 6th, 7th grade area, I'm sure. And, all right. Sorry, teachers.
Sorry. Well, no, it's accurate. I mean, all the kids who said, I'll never need to know this, you're one of those kids who never did need to know it. So I appreciate that. And last one, this is actually today's topic. On your phone for apps, like social media apps, for example, notifications audible on the screen only or none at all?
Very few on the screen. I haven't had my ringer on my phone in years. It's always been vibrate for anything.
Safer.
So, yep. Very, very few notifications on my phone because if not, I would never get anything done.
It would be all notifications all the time. I understand that. Mayor D.C. Reeves, exactly. City of Pensacola, sir, as always, a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for the information. Thanks for the time this morning. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, Andrew.
Always. 550 News Radio 92.3. Leadership Pensacola, LEAP, Class of 2024, is helping Valerie's House. That's a place that helps children and families work through the loss of a loved one together, making sure that no child has to grieve alone. LEAP Class is helping redo the grounds of the house, and you can make a donation at News Radio or find out how at newsradio923.com. We care about the arts. Pensacola Symphony Orchestra presents the Symphonic Spectacular on Saturday, March 23rd, this Saturday. Tickets are available at PensacolaSymphony.com, PensacolaSymphony.com, and later on in the show, we'll have tickets to give away for that. Covenant Cares Art of Fashion Parisian Escape is coming up on Thursday, April 4th, and it's going to be très chic. Yeah, they made me read French. Get your tickets to this fashion soiree. Look at all this French in here. I love it. For a cause that features local boutiques and family model face, familiar model faces. Your $100 ticket includes entry into the pre-party and after-party fashion show, 2 drink vouchers and hors d'oeuvres. Invite your horty horse, as some people say it. Invite your friends, pick out your City of Love-inspired outfit, and we'll see you on the runway to support the mission of Covenant Care. More details and French pronunciations at newsradio923.com. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News.
It's the biggest party of the year, coming April 6th.
Pensacola Little Theater presents Cabaret. Express yourself. Come paint the town red. Pensacola Little Theater transforms the entire building and the surrounding block into an indoor and outdoor entertainment complex for one unforgettable night. You'll find yourself winding through the bands, DJs, flash mobs, ballerinas, singers, dancers, and so much more, including 6 open bars and culinary art. Don't miss the biggest party of the year, Cabaret.
Get your tickets now at the PLT box office or at PensacolaLittleTheater.com.
Attention all empowered women. Jim's Firearms is inviting you to celebrate Women's History Month with purpose and passion. Join us as we champion women's empowerment with the motto, Guns Rights or Women's Rights. Jim's Firearms is dedicated to education and ensuring you have the tools to protect yourself. Be a part of the movement and let the team guide you through a first-rate, non-intimidating, comfortable gun buying experience. Visit Jim's Firearms at the corner of Sorrento Road and Blue Angel Parkway or find them online at jimsfirearms.net.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
News Radio 92.3 gets your live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I want you to remember this face here, okay? This is the guy behind the guy behind the guy.
So a lifeguard presence on Perdita Key this year. I'm working with Alexander Johnson, my deputy water chief. He'll be here this morning. We're going to nail down some things of what that looks like. It's going to be a hybrid system because we are so spread out with beach accesses out there at Perdita Key, you know, 1 through 4. We're looking at putting a hardened structure that the board let us buy with lost funds, might I say. It was lifeguard towers with lost funds.
The reason Eric Gilmore was talking about that, Director of Public Safety Eric Gilmore was talking about the LOST money, is because it had come up earlier in the conversation on the Jeff Bergosh Coffee with the commissioner yesterday, that's going to be on the agenda for the Escambia County Commission meeting today to approve the half penny for the school board, I believe, is the part that they're going to look at today. Anyway, Eric talking about the lifeguard mandate out on Perdido Key. Member Commissioner Bergosh has done a lot to expand, you know, beach access out there, and as a consequence, you had a lot more people going to the beach, and as a consequence, you had I mean, I'm not saying it's all just because of this, but, you know, last year we had a horrible incident. And so then there was a big push to see if we can't get guards out on the beach, and now we've got a structure coming, and as Eric was talking about, we're going to, you know, be staffing trucks to go back and forth. He and AJ, nobody calls him Alex Johnson, was out there yesterday looking at that. We're actually going to talk to Eric coming up at 6:35 about, you know, what they have decided, because the question I have been raising all along is, hey, this is great. However, the pool of lifeguards available is not unlimited. And we already have staffing challenges at the beach, especially with the rules regarding how many hours you can work at what age and all of this. So, you know, how are we going to be able to put enough manpower out there? The thought was that maybe the Gulf Islands National Seashore would not renew their contract to put lifeguards in the seashore. And they did renew. So that still has to be accommodated. So, you know, what will the plan entail? Not sure yet. But the key thing is they got to have people out there, not just to, you know, use binoculars and look over the beach and be able to run out and rescue, but also prevention. That is one of the key things, is prevention.
Subject to change. If we find that that's not truly working for our best interest, or we need to reset, we might reset throughout the season, but that's roughly what it's looking like right now. A lifeguard staying at 2 with a roving patrol at 1, 3, and 4. And of course, we've always had lifeguards at Johnson's Beach as part of that contract with Gulf Islands National Seashore that we cover that area and been doing that for years. So we're excited to bring something out there to be able to talk to the public and make contact with them.
Yeah, which again, prevention is a really hefty portion of what they do. Also, just kind of an interesting note, I had never noticed it before, but it got brought up yesterday that the trucks carry flags behind them to tell you whether it's a red, you know, double red, purple, green, or yellow. And so the flags drive around with information in that regard. But also, Orange Beach doesn't have any green flags. They never put a green flag up because they consider that too much of a risk to tell people that the Gulf is ever a green. We say it's a green, but pay attention. So just kind of an interesting note that why is it that you would have, for example, the flags at Johnson Beach or the flags on Perdido Key would be green, but Orange Beach would be yellow, not because of different conditions, but because of a different interpretive matrix or a different, you know, way of warning people about the dangers of the Gulf. They do yellows and above. We do green, yellow, red, double red. 5:56 News Radio 92.3. We got David Wayne in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, the search is continuing today for the missing University of Missouri student Riley Strain, who vanished March 8th after being asked to leave a bar in downtown Nashville. Search and rescue crews there focusing their efforts about 40 miles downstream from Nashville. And yesterday we learned the Cajun Navy was even joining in on that search. The most decorated ship in U.S. Navy history leaving its dock in New Jersey today for the first time in decades. The battleship New Jersey headed to the Philadelphia Naval Yard in the down the Delaware River for some big maintenance work. Apparently, 600 passengers are going to be cruising alongside that ship as it travels down the river today.
Accompanied exclusively by music from Bon Jovi and Bruce Springsteen?
It would only make sense.
The only way it could happen, right.
Mm-hmm. And the first person, Andrew, to receive that brain implant from Elon Musk's Neuralink,
nope.
A 20-year-old quadriplegic.
Nope. Sorry, go on. Nope. Go on.
is speaking about his experience with that device so far.
It just became intuitive for me to start imagining the cursor moving. Basically, it was like using the force on a cursor, and I could get it to move wherever I wanted, just stare somewhere in the screen, and it would move where I wanted it to, which was such a wild experience. One of the first times y'all gave me complete control over this, I actually stayed up until, geez, I don't know, like 6 a.m. playing Civilization VI.
And can I just say, if you're playing Civilization VI, you should expect to stay up until 6 a.m. That's the only way that works. No, but that was from a live stream that this guy did on X, and he talked about his experience, and you could see in the video the mouse cursor on his computer moving, and he's just using his brain to do that. It's wild. Mm. It is wild.
Wookiee religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid.
that's my response. Oh, man. Elon Musk invents the Force. Jedis use it to play video games. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
That sounds about right for 2024. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Oh, you sparked something in my head that's completely unrelated, but it's a little bit related. This is the weirdest thing. Yesterday, I was editing a paper, working on something, and for whatever reason, I used my left button on the mouse and selected text going from left to right, instead of from right to left. And I realized that felt completely unnatural. Just a weird
dependable
thing.
Traffic on the fives. Weekdays on News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.